Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy football. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by an ever-increasing early bird. Jeff, it's 5:15 again where you are. What's happening? I mean, I guess it's football season, right? It's go time.
The sun hasn't even come up yet, and I'm sitting at my office getting ready to, have meetings and all that stuff before practice this morning. So this is when we can fit it in. Let's do it.
What's the record of the Tiger Cats at the moment? You won on opening weekend, lost last week, lost in week two. What about last week?
Last week we lost by four. We had a chance driving at the end of the game. Got the ball to the 15 and took a sack and a fumble and just one of those games. Neil, was hard football game. We returned a missed field goal 120 yards, which you can do on our field because it's 20 yards longer than the U.S. field. But even that wasn't enough. We turned the ball over six times. Had 10 penalties, just really sloppy, and you can't beat professional football teams when you turn the ball over six times. I don't care how good you play on the other phases of the game. So, we got work to do, and it's a long season. That's what people have to understand about the pros. It's 18 games, and you want to get to the bye. You want to get to your midpoint at even, and then make a run for the playoffs. So. We're all right. We just, again, got to take better care of the football.
Jeff, you could be playing in the CFL, the NFL. Over here in London, you put a football field anywhere in the world. If you have six or seven turnovers, you're probably losing that game, whatever the level, right?
There's no question about that. It's too hard to overcome. And a number of those turnovers, three of them, came while we had the ball in the scoring zone. Mm. And you're looking for, we lost by four, so you're looking for 5 points when you watch the film. And we talked to the kids about this yesterday when they came in after their day off. And, we're looking for 5 points, and there's plenty of opportunities in every phase of the game. We had an opportunity to block a punt and missed it. That could have been a huge turnaround. Defensively, we dropped an interception. And, offensively, obviously, when you give it up six times, it's hard to win football games. So it's there. It's just that we've got to play a cleaner game. And, it's funny, you hear the coaching cliches, and the one I keep going back to is take care of the ball. It's all about the ball.
Mm. That's what it is, isn't it? Got to keep that football. When we see that with players in the NFL, I know Matt Jones, the Washington Redskins running back in his rookie year last year, very exciting player, but he had some issues holding on to the football. The Redskins got one of these balls, Jeff, that's got, I know they're out on the market now, it's got sensors in it, which is kind of detects where you're not holding it properly. And it's that old cliche, he has to carry it around the facility and make sure he's holding the ball properly and squeezing it tight. I mean, it's all levels of the game. Even right at the highest level there in the NFL, there's a player whose, I guess, his career path could be slowed if you can't look after the football. We've seen many a running back who don't make it in the NFL because they can't take care of the rock.
No, that's exactly right. And, you think about Tiki Barber's career with the Giants. He becomes, a great player and really one of the most outstanding running backs in the NFL only after he cured himself of, and Coach Coughlin did a great job with him about carrying the ball, how he carried the ball, because fumbles really were, put his NFL career at risk when he was very young, young in his career. Coughlin told him, he said, if you're going to put the ball on the ground, we're going to find another running back. So he made him, as you said, carry the ball around the facility. He talked about carrying the ball high and tight. And his ability to protect the football was really what changed his career and really changed the fortunes of the Giants in some ways.
I know I've told this story on this podcast before, but Hall of Fame running back Curtis Martin told me at the NFL tailgate party last year, Jeff, that he had a fumbling problem early in his career, and Bill Parcells did the same thing again, made him carry the football around, made him look after the football even while he was eating lunch. And players were supposed to try and knock it loose the whole time. That was the thing. If they knocked it loose, then Curtis Martin was in trouble with Bill Parcells. And Curtis said he ate his lunch like he was in prison. He was kind of hunched over his tray, holding the football, trying to eat with one hand.
But you know what? It's interesting. You see little things that as you go around. I think it was 3 years ago, I went down and visited Rob Ryan and with the Saints. And as you walked into the defensive meeting room of the Saints, they had a ball, an NFL ball, attached to a spring and then screwed into the wall. So all the defensive players, as they walked into the meeting, would what we call hatchet the ball, where they would take their hand above their head and they would, you know, swat at the ball.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting. We thought that was such a great idea. We brought it back here. We have one as our players go out on the field, not in the meeting room, but as they go out on the field to practice and as they come in off of the practice field, they all swat at that ball. And you know what? It creates a habit or helps create a habit of what we call hatcheting the ball. And on a kickoff this past game, our safety on the kickoff team, the guy who was carrying the ball, struggling for extra yards, he came in and it was just like they do it walking out on the field. He hatcheted the ball out of the returner's hands and we got a big turnover. So, you know, we talk all the time about it's about the ball, but it really is. And your ability to take it away and your ability to protect it are, you know, big indicators of how successful you're going to be as a team.
So it's really interesting that, Jeff, because you know, sometimes it's said, oh, then there are no new ideas in football. You know, it's just you go around and you see what somebody else is doing and you adopt certain ones. And they say that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. I guess you went to see your old friend there, Rob Ryan, just went for a catch up with an old friend. And all of a sudden you come across certain ideas that you take back to your team and then your team's forcing fumbles on the field. It's fascinating to just see what you learn on the road and what you then put into practice.
Well, you know, you get that opportunity, Neil, to go around all the training camps and you see the differences, the way things are done. You know, one of the things we do is in our business is what we call off-season research and development, where we're always finding ways to do things better, to build a better mousetrap, if you will. And you know, when we put that ball on. You know, in the tunnel leading out into the stadium, and ask our kids to hit it every day, and then, you know, reinforce that in practice. We created 52 turnovers last year during the season, and that was a big reason why we played in the Eastern Championship, because those are extra possessions. Those are bonus possessions. Forget about, you know, the psychological benefit of it and the emotional benefit of it, but just that's 52 extra possessions you get your offense over the course of the season, you're going to have success.
Absolutely. Turnovers key at all levels of the game. There's not a lot going on in the NFL. This is the quiet time, as we've talked about, but there's a lot going on in the UK. Last night, I hosted a fan event with Andrew Luck, Dwayne Allen, the Indianapolis Colts tight end, Anthony Darblay, the New York Giants wide receiver from France, and Moritz Boehringer. The painfully shy, whispering assassin, I'm going to nickname him from now on, Jeff. He's a man of few words, and if you get a few out of him, you're lucky, of the Minnesota Vikings. It was a great event. They were all part of an NFL on and off the field camp that took place over the weekend. I've got the largest ever fan night this evening with 8 NFL players to celebrate the International Series. And then, Jeff, tomorrow, the NFL UK's Play 60 Summer Bowl event takes place in London. There's going to be 1,000 school children aged between 8 and 11 who are taking part in flag football. A total of 47 schools taking part in the day. 32 are going to be involved in a tournament. I mean, this game just goes from strength to strength on these shores.
Well, you know what? I think it's really a phenomenal thing. And what's most impressive to me, Neil, is the fact that you're going to have 1,000 school kids in the summer at one venue playing flag football. And I think that's an indication of the phenomenal job that you guys have done, that, you know, Alistair Kirkwood and everybody at NFL UK and NFL International have done in building not just a fan base, but really a culture inside of the sporting culture in the UK. And I've watched now as American football and the NFL have gone from kind of a oddity in a niche sport to really a genuine, you know, upper level interest participation sport in a fabulous country.
Jeff, Dwayne Allen was a lot of fun last night, actually. Really sort of took over the stage. One of those like larger-than-life characters. You can imagine him being really good in the locker room. I asked him at one point, what's it like to play with Andrew Luck? You know, have this guy throwing the passes to you. And he said, when you first meet him, when I first came into the NFL, you think, geek. Then he said, and then after a couple of practices, you think, geek who throws a really nice football. it wasn't much analysis, but... He was ribbing Andrew quite a bit last night, but it was good fun.
How was Andrew? Was he any different at all now that he signed that big, contract?
A little bit, yes. I was hoping you wouldn't ask me that. I think he's a little bit more reticent to answer some. You know, he was very careful not to make headlines. And he answered every question, but if there was anything controversial, then he wanted to sort of steer well away from it. I think he understands that he's well and truly in the spotlight at the moment, Jeff.
Well, I think that's good, and I think more guys need to understand that, their responsibility to the game, he's an amazing guy, and I always say, you're probably closer to him than most any journalist in the world, and I think he handles himself extremely well, and there's a way to be a leader, and I think it's interesting that he can take a ribbing like that and he kind of pokes fun at himself.
Oh yeah,
one of our players here played with him at Stanford and loves him to death, and said he was the same guy at Stanford. He was the butt of a lot of jokes in the locker room, but he kind of shrugged them off and understood it kind of came with the territory, and embraced his geekiness is the way Brian Baelke describes him.
Well, Jeff, here's the deal with Andrew, and I've got to know him a lot over recent years. You're right. He's the same guy he was in university, and the reason he he's sometimes a little bit careful with what he answers and how he answers is because or what parts of the media he gets involved with is because he actually, honestly, and this is not a front, it's not a facade, he has no interest in being a superstar. If he could earn a living for his family and play American football on the moon with no one watching, then I think he would do it. I think all the trimmings and all the bits that are superfluous to being an NFL quarterback. He understands his role, he understands his duty, he understands which bits he has to do. Anything on top of that, it's not that he's being rude, it's not that he's being dismissive. He isn't. He's hugely respectful of the game's traditions. He's a great role model. I've seen how he works with young British quarterbacks, and including my own son, and my son wears number 12 because of the way Andrew acts towards him and how he's been around him. But he just doesn't really care for the stardom of it, Jeff.
Well, you know what? Not everybody wants to be in, out there. And, that's not his personality. I think he grew up, and, you look at the way he grew up with his father being an NFL player and then his dad, being a high-level executive in both, the National Football League and then professional soccer. He's been around it. He's seen it. I think he also sees it for what it is. And, he's well grounded in himself. He knows, who he is and what he wants to be and how he wants to project himself, and he's very comfortable in his own skin. And I admire that.
Me too, absolutely. Let's move on then to the breakout players in the NFC. So last week we looked at the AFC, sort of younger players, players that have already played in the league for a little bit, might have been a year, maybe a couple of years, but players that we feel are going to make a step up. Jeff, we can either go division by division, or if you've got a top-line guy, I don't mind how you do it. Who kind of stands out for you in the NFC? Maybe we can start with the NFC East. You got any guys in there?
Well, I can't think of a better guy. And maybe this is putting too much on him because he hasn't carried the ball yet in the National Football League. But we talk about it, it comes down to opportunity and being in the right place, right time, right system. A lot of things, a lot of factors go into, how a guy, quote, explodes on the scene. Mm. And, opportunity is one of those things. So I'm going to give you Ezekiel Elliott as my guy that I want to focus on.
Yep.
As a potential breakout guy. And here's the reasons. As you evaluate his football team, first of all, he's going to play behind one of the best offensive lines in the National Football League. So he's got great players around him. That's important. Two, you know, you got to look at the defensive side of the ball right now in Dallas. Excuse me. Early in the season, they've got to protect that defense because they've got guys hurt, they've got guys in suspension. And how do you protect the defense? Well, you run the football. So there's two factors already that indicate to me he's in, you know, he's primed for one of those, you know, explosions onto the scene kind of years. And then you factor in also that Dallas's personality, you know, Jason will run the ball. He's not, you know, they've proven that. And so I think he has the ability, certainly he showed it at Ohio State. He showed it in, you know, at the combine. He showed it in, you know, his pre-draft workouts. That could be the guy that just blows up on the scene, you know, and really, you know, has one of those 1,200-yard rookie seasons that, you know, turn a guy from just a prospect into, you know, a great one.
I'll give you a couple of names I've got listed down in the NFC, Jeff. I think I'm very keen to see what Nelson Agholor can do, young wide receiver who was kind of injured quite a bit in the first year around in the NFL. He had a high ankle sprain. He only had 23 catches and one touchdown in 12 starts. What can he do? I'm looking to see what he can produce in 2016. And in terms of opportunity, I'm going to stick with running back as well. Matt Jones, who I mentioned earlier with the Washington Redskins, showed flashes, Jeff. He rushed for close to 500 yards. He also caught passes out of the backfield. The reason I've sort of listed Matt Jones is because he's going to get an opportunity because he's now the number one back. But then part of me kind of holds back and thinks, well, Washington, with all those passing weapons, they kind of unleashed Kirk Cousins and the passing attack second half of the season. Matt Jones maybe doesn't get, he certainly doesn't get the workload that Ezekiel Elliott gets, does he?
No, and I think that may be the difference between the two guys. And you also mentioned that fumble. He's going to have to come to terms with that and develop the habits that allow him to protect the football better. But again, I think that Redskin team, you know, could be poised for a breakout year if they can improve that defense. Neil, if that defense can come, particularly in when you look at in the area of pass rush, because when you watched them last year, when we had them in some of the late games as they were, you know, making their playoff push. That was the one Achilles heel that you saw in the football team. They couldn't manufacture pressure, and whether it was because they didn't feel like they could cover in the back end or they didn't, you know, whatever philosophical reason, they just couldn't get there with four and were very reticent to blitz. So, you know, again, I think if that defense can step up and you know, show improvement, then that, the Redskins, I think, as a team are primed to be one of those kind of breakout teams.
Yeah, I agree. NFC North, Jeff, any of you like in there?
Well, you know, you look at that bunch of teams and you know, there's some guys that you say, well, if he's going to be that guy, he's got to go to the next step. And I'm talking about it, Teddy Bridgewater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think for that football team, to get where it wants to be and get to, you know, the next level, which is to get deeper in the playoffs and become a true Super Bowl contender, he's going to have to win some games, Neil, on his own. And, you know, he hasn't, in my opinion, hasn't shown the ability to do that. He's shown that he can manage the games, he can make some throws, he can do some things. But for the Vikings to become a real, you know, a real Super Bowl contender, they just can't rely on the running game and AP. They've got to be able to throw from the pocket, and that's where I think if he can do that, then he can be considered one of those ascending or breakout guys in the NFL.
That is a key thing, Jeff, isn't it, for some of these breakout players. Do it on your own. So Matt Jones, you no longer have Alfred Morris there. Let's look at Chicago Bears. Jeremy Langford showed us some really promising flashes last year, but Matt Forte was still on that roster. Now, Jeremy Langford is the man. So, you know, that's where you have to take a different step and a different approach. All of a sudden, Jeremy Langford goes into training camp next couple of weeks, Jeff. All eyes are on him. He is the the number one running back. That must bring a different amount of pressure.
Absolutely, Neil. There's no question about that, because you go from being, you know, like the relief pitcher, the guy that comes in, and there's no pressure on you because you're coming in there and you're going to get your touches, and you know you're not. The expectation level is lower. Now, when you are the feature back, when you are the guy, and everybody in the media, everybody in the locker room, every fan expects you to now take those, quote, flashes and turn them into consistent, high-level NFL. And you're asking more of a guy. And some guys, the mental pressure of having to ascend like that can be too much for them. And other guys, you know, they hunger for that spotlight and really take it and run with it. So each case is an individual, and that's, you know, we talk about opportunity. Well, opportunity certainly is important, but also how you handle that opportunity is also very important.
Jeff, one name I want to throw at you. I had on my list, I had Danielle Hunter, the youngest player in the NFL last year for the Vikings. He had 6 sacks, but here's another name, and I want to get your take on Jeff Janis, because the Packers had a lot of problems at wide receiver last year. Then all of a sudden, Janis comes in the playoff game against Arizona, catches 7 passes, 145 yards and 2 touchdowns. And you're already chuckling, because in 30-plus years, I bet you've seen players who've had the most amazing games and then they've disappeared off the radar. So can Jeff Janis be a breakout player, or are you telling me that, well, there are many occasions over your years in pro football when players have had an amazing game and then not followed it up?
Yeah, one game does not a career make. And, you know, it's interesting you brought his name up, because, you know, as I thought about this, he was one of the guys that I considered. But he, in my mind, he hasn't even done enough yet to consider him, you know, could he be a breakout player? Yeah, he could, because he's tall, he can run, he's got a lot of things. But boy, is he raw. I mean, he is really, really raw. And, you know, how much he's able to, you know, grow through the off season, the OTAs, the mini camps, and now into training camp and through the preseason. I'm not, you know, again, to me, a guy like Jeff Janis isn't a lock to even make that team yet. So I think in my mind, he's a guy that certainly has the ability. He has all of the physical tools you look for. He's just, he's just young. He hasn't learned how to be a great, great player, an NFL player yet. And some guys never take that step. They have that one, that one game, and then all of a sudden they disappear from the spotlight. So with Jeff.
Remember Timmy Smith in the Super Bowl, Jeff?
Interesting. Pardon me?
Do you remember Timmy Smith in the Super Bowl for the Redskins?
I tell you what, there's been a bunch of them. I mean, there's been guys that have had great games. Who's it? I can't even remember the guy's name from the Giants, caught the ball against his head, right?
David Tyree.
And then where is he? A year later, he's out of football.
Yeah.
No? And that's just, it's at times the spotlight shines on you, and you have that game of your life. You know, because you look at Janis's game and against Arizona, some of those plays were just, he's almost unconscious. The play he made in the end zone was, phenomenal.
Yeah, but he's a bubble guy then. He could be a breakout or disappear.
Yeah, exactly. He could go either way. You know, where I think Bridgewater, to me, is a guy that he's established a baseline, if you will, as a player, as a quarterback. Now, that baseline is going to be good enough to challenge every year because they're good enough around him, but that baseline isn't going to be good enough if he doesn't take it to the next step. Kind of like Andy Dalton in ways, except he's younger in his career.
NFC South, Jeff, we've got some exciting young players in that division now, some competitive teams. Anyone stand out for you in that division?
Well, you know what? You look at the South, and you think about guys, and I think when you look at some of the, there's so many young ones that you just go, who's going to be the next one? Who's going to be the guy that takes that? Because when you talk about breakout, what exactly does breakout mean to you? To me, it means where a guy goes from being a consistent player, a young player with talent, to being a consistent, proven go-to hey, everybody's talking about he's one of the best in the game, or he's one of the ascending stars in the game. I don't know, Neil, who I would say in the South has that, is in that category of, of player. I kind of hesitate to throw a name out there.
Well, Jeff, let me ask you about a name that I've got written down because I wanted to ask you about him. Jameis Winston of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So he threw for 4,042 yards, 22 touchdowns. He added 6 rushing touchdowns. But I sensed when we did our podcast tour in January, and we had a few questions about Jameis, you want to see a body of work that's more than those 16 games. I mean, Jameis is young, and but he did show some work ethic, but I sensed you want to see a bit more.
Yeah, and you know what? And I'm going to say this. I was not a big fan of, I mean, obviously he's talented. Mm-hmm. There's no question about that. But what I saw at Florida State, and I think we talked about this, was I saw too much inconsistency in his play, too many interceptions, too many forced balls, too many bad decisions. And, those are the things that get you beat in the league. We talked about turnovers earlier in the game. Winston is intriguing to me in that what appears to have happened, and this is why, I always am a little bit slow to say, well, the guy figured it out, right? But it appears that some of the knocks against him, which were work ethic and, decision-making and leadership and those kinds of things, he seems to have, or Dirk Cutter has done a great job with him, whatever. You didn't get the off-field stuff that you got at Florida State, the immaturity in the media that you got at Florida State. So, again, I'm hopeful for him that he can put another year of growth behind him. And, again, if he does, then his needle is pointed where you want it to be. But I'm always a little bit cautious with guys that come with some of the, some of the baggage that he comes with.
Into the NFC West, Jeff, I've got written down 3 running backs. And your thoughts on them? David Johnson in Arizona, Carlos Hyde in San Francisco, and Thomas Rawls in Seattle.
That's my guy, David Johnson.
You like him, yeah?
That guy to me is, I think he kind of exploded on the scene last year. And it was really interesting. There's a show on right now about the Arizona Cardinals, or it's been on this summer about the Arizona Cardinals. Mm. And it's kind of a Hard Knocks type inside the NFL, kind of an inside look at the Cardinals. And interestingly enough, they were at the draft with the Cardinals, and they wanted Abdullah. And then when they didn't get him, they kind of, quote, settled on David Johnson. I don't think they really knew what they had when they took him. They knew he was a good player, had the measurables, all that other stuff. Mm. But that kid, wow. I mean, he can do everything that you want one to do. He can run with it. He can catch it out of the backfield. He can isolate. You can isolate him on a linebacker. You can run in between the tackles. He can take the ball outside. He's tough. He's durable. Mm. He's got, home run hitter speed. So that guy right there is the guy that I think another year in that offense and the way Bruce can get the ball into his playmaker's hand. I really look for him to have a phenomenal season.
Jeff, when I wrote my season preview magazine, Touchdown, I picked David Johnson as my player to watch and a breakout player for the Cardinals. Same reasons you said, Jeff. I mean, it's home run ability, but also he looked like Marshawn Lynch when he had that 200-yard game against the Philadelphia Eagles. He was breaking tackles left, right, and center. I think he's got the tools to be a 1,500-yard receiver. The only thing holding him back is Bruce Arians likes to turn it into a track meet. He's got all those receivers. There's only so many times you're going to get the ball.
Yeah, there's only one ball. Unless we change the rules, there's only one ball. There's only one ball in play every day. So, yeah, it's about touches and it's about opportunity. But I think, with the other way to look at that very same question is, when you've got to deal with all of those weapons on defense, sometimes that can create opportunities for guys because, you're going to double here, you're going to double there, you can't play this front because you can't drop into an 8-man box. So a guy like Arians, who's as good an offensive coach as he is, will figure out ways to get that talented of a player the football enough times that he can be a factor. And let's talk about Carlos Hyde. And this is why I think talent-wise, I agree with you. I really agree with you. What I'm a little bit skeptical is, now, he's not playing in, you know, we talked about opportunity. He's not playing in a run, particularly running back friendly offense, right? And Chip's not been a guy that's, you know, quote, had a featured back and, you know, is going to get them, you know, all kind of touches. And so I think it's going to come down to, you know, I think the 49ers are going to be improved, but I don't know if they're going to be improved enough that, you know, that he's, you know, like going to make that quantum jump into being one of the guys that you talk about as one of the top backs in the NFL. Plus, again, I don't know if the system's particularly friendly for making him a, quote, feature back.
Rules is an interesting one, Jeff, isn't he? Because there's one thing subbing for Marshawn Lynch, who was injured last year, and you have no other choice. And, you know, he's a good story. But now, again, he's the man. He's the man who's following one of the most emotional leaders of any NFL team in the last 7 or 8 years. I mean, Marshawn Lynch has been the spiritual, the physical, the emotional leader of this Seahawks team. And now he's no longer there. And I know the makeup of the team changes and it becomes Russell Wilson's team. But when you look at who's carrying the football, all eyes are now on Thomas Rawls.
Yeah, and then, you know, we talked about expectations. You know, those are very, very, very big shoes to fill. There'll be a lot of people in that stadium still wearing number 24 jerseys, and so, you know, that's going to be an interesting one to watch. I think you watch that team transition where they're less dependent upon, you know, the tailback, if you will, the ability to just hand it to the tailback 25 or 30 times a game and pound away. And, you know, I think that's always going to be Pete's, you know, number one. I mean, I don't see them coming out and being, you know, Eric Carroll, but I do think that as they transition into being more of Russell's team, that means the ball's going to get spread out a little bit more. And I think we saw that, you know, their receiving core is maybe a little bit better than people gave him credit for last year. And so as Wilson develops and the playbook gets, you know, a few more pages in it, again, that to me means that the less and less of the focus is going to be on the running back position, and that means less touches and less opportunity. So I don't know if while Rawls is a, you know, cut out of the same cloth of Marshawn Lynch, you know, physical, between the tackles, pounder. Again, you're talking about filling some pretty big shoes.
You certainly are. That's our breakout players from the NFC. Let's move on to the mailbag just to wrap up, and then we'll get Jeff off to the practice field. Here's a good one, actually, Jeff, as we just talked about Teddy Bridgewater, from Tommy B, who says, in your opinion, who's better, Teddy Bridgewater or Blake Bortles?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm a Bortles fan. I really think, and we had talked about him when we were doing this, you know, last week. And I think that they're two so different. They're at such different places with their football team. You know, in Minnesota, they've got a great running back and they've got a great tight end, and they depend upon the quarterback to manage the game for him, not to win the game for him. In Blake's situation, his time in the NFL, he's been the guy that really they just put it on him. And he, you know, they were talent deficient around him, talent deficient in the offensive line. And he's out there just slinging it, trying to keep them in games. So I think that when you look at him and just evaluate him as a coach would evaluate him, that Bortles has much more upside. He's bigger. He's got a bigger arm. He's tough. He's got all the qualities that you look for. And I think he's going to really show people just who he is now that, you know, he's got a better football team around him.
I don't evaluate the same way as you, Jeff. I'm not a coach, but I know when a quarterback really comes into his own is when you kind of need him the most and when things don't always go to plan. And if I take these two quarterbacks out of their structure and out of their plan, if Adrian Peterson gets stuffed at the line of scrimmage for 30 runs in a row, do I trust Teddy Bridgewater to put the game on his shoulders and win it? Do I trust Blake Bortles? I would lean quite emphatically in the direction of Blake Bortles. I think he's got that little bit of a gunslinger mentality. He's kind of got a bit of a swagger about him. I think he's got all the physical tools. So I would certainly go towards Bortles.
I agree with you. I think that, you know, not only from the measurable standpoint, the height, weight, strength, you know, arm, feet, all that stuff, I just think that he's got a little bit more of the it that the great ones have, which is the ability to, you know, perform when the lights go, you know, are the brightest, but also when you fail and the lights are brightest, to come back and perform again. And I like his fearlessness as a player.
Jeff, you just break out the mailbag. You talked about the great tight end in Minnesota, Kyle Rudolph, and we know that Kyle likes to block as well as catch passes, and he has to in that system. Last night at the fan event that we had in London, a fan asked Dwayne Allen, what do you enjoy most? What's your favorite play? Is there a favorite route you like to run and a touchdown you've scored? Dwayne said the best feeling in the world on a football field for him personally is delivering a crushing block and then feeling the wind of the running back sailing off his shoulder off to the end zone. Again, evidence that you've still got these complete tight ends in the NFL who like to block and catch.
And those guys are the great ones to me because they can do all of those things. And that's why, you look at Kyle Rudolph and, you know, he kind of gets lost in the conversation when you talk about tight ends in the NFL because he plays, you know, in Minnesota. Number one, he doesn't play in a large market. Number two, you know, he doesn't play on a team that's going to feature that position. You know, again, when you look at the guys, you know, around that have, you know, got the big reputations as tight ends, the Jimmy Grahams, the Gates, the Gronkowski, they all play in systems where the tight end does multiple things and he's all over the field and they really feature him in the passing game. I don't see that in the playbook in Minnesota where Kyle is the number one threat. I think he can do very many of those same things as, you know, we talked about. You know, he's probably not as mobile as Travis Kelce is, but he's a much, much better inline player. You know, so to me, I think, and it's, this is not biased because he's a friend of ours, but I just really think Kyle Rudolph is a guy that plays one of the tougher positions on the field because tight end demands multiple skills. And really, I don't know if a lot of people appreciate just how good he is.
Let's take this question from Willie Trencher. Jeff, this is a good one. I think you can give your insight into. He said, is Moneyball type analysis of players prevailing over the eyes of coaches and scouts? We talk about this all the time around the draft, Jeff. Is it all about the numbers or do you go back and watch the game film? So, you know, analytics are a big part of professional football now. We all know that. We all understand that it's key. But is Moneyball stats analysis prevailing over the eyes of coaches and scouts?
It's not prevailing over it, but it's now added another dimension into the evaluation process. And, you know, I think it's a term, you know, it can be a little bit of a cliche or, you know, kind of a hot term when you talk about Moneyball. Well, there's always been Moneyball. It's been value for the dollar. What do you get for the dollar for the player? But the ability now to really hone in and go deeper and drill deeper statistically to find out, you know, who the guys are that really can do multiple things or, you know, bring more value per dollar to your team. That has become kind of a new frontier in player evaluation. And I think that the best teams have the ability to blend that with the eyes of the scouts, the film, the hours and hours of film evaluation, all of those things. If you're gonna be great in the personnel department, and I think that there are a few teams that are, one of the things you see them do is they evaluate the entire thing. It's not just, okay, some scout goes and watches a guy play and comes back and says the kid can play, let's draft him. It's the whole deal. It's the film. It's the conversations with trainers and coaches and, you know, character evaluation and, you know, how hard does he work? All that kind of stuff goes into really making a proper evaluation of a player, and the, you know, the Moneyball aspect is, you know, it's important now because the salary cap is so important.
some of the old school people, Jeff, they throw the term analytics around like it's a dirty word, like game manager for a quarterback.
You know, I think that's wrong, because I think analytics are important. You know, I told you about, I have a friend who and works for, is vice president with the Bears, and he does, football research is his deal, right? Which is basically analytics. And it's amazing how far they drill. It's amazing how far down they go. They will know during the course, and this is Matt's job during the course of the game, is to be on the phone with Fox. And let's say they're driving for a late field goal in the game, and they know that their field goal kicker is, and again, I'm just throwing numbers here, but he's 75% off the right hash and 58% off the left hash. Well, then they know that, and they're reminded of that during the course of that last drive to move the ball to where he has the best statistical chance to kick the field goal. That's the level of analytics that is going on in the NFL now, and it's done in the course of the game. So as the director of football research, Matt's job is to have all of those things, at his fingertips during the course of a game so that they can give themselves the best chance. Because as my man said, you play to win the game.
Exactly. You certainly do. Jeff, one more question. You've just given a long, in-depth answer for that one, so I'll take care of this one. It won't take too long. It comes from Bruff Cooper, who says, is there any chance of a winning season for the Miami Dolphins? No, none.
Oh.
Done.
Come on. You don't think they're going to be better?
I do.
So pessimistic when it comes to your fin.
Well, I tell you what, I think Tannehill will grow under Adam Gase, so I think he will be better. I'm excited to see what Jay Ajayi does. I still think the offensive line is a work in progress, and the defense, I think, maybe took a step back. The defense got a little bit older. So I think they're going to have to score a lot of points each week to win. I think they're a 7 or 8 win team, Jeff. They potentially could get to 9, but you can tell I'm not overly confident.
Well, look at the division now. I mean, when you look at the division, how do you say every one of those teams in one way, shape, or form didn't take a little bit of a step back during the offseason? So, it's interesting, what's going to happen with the Jets with that quarterback situation. The Bills, there's a lot of pressure on these Bills up here right now. Are they going to be better on defense? They've got to be better on defense because, they're going to play that type of, small ball, if you will, that Rex likes to play and win games 13-10. And, again, the Patriots, have they gotten their offensive line thing squared away? Brady's a year older. He's going to be suspended for some games. So, if you're a Dolphins fan, to me, there's glimmers of hope out there, And I think I agree with you. I think Adam Gase is going to be good for that team.
Yeah, we'll see. Jeff, it's probably best if we just say we're out of time because you've got to go practice. I've got to get ready for this fan night. Until next week.
Have a great time out there.
I will. Bye. Until next week, why don't you say goodbye to the good folks?
All right, brother. Aloha. Have a great time with those guys and with the fans.